Because I'm doing BASN. Thank you for inviting me. We have some other colleges here, so. But I'll begin. The name of the lecture is Feelings with Animals. Well, it is agreed in literature and in popular discourse that animals have feelings and that people have feelings towards animals. In this paper, I would like to discuss the therapeutic influence animals have on people's feelings. I intend to address this issue from an interdisciplinary perspective, from my practice of animal-assisted therapy, and from my anthropological fieldwork between the years 2010 and 11 within safaris in Africa. I intend to use these different perspectives as a platform for raising a discussion about the concept of social interaction between humans and animals. I would like to begin with an example of a true story which was made into a movie. The story is about a 17-year-old boy who suffered from PTSD, post-traumatic syndrome disorder, whose life was changed thanks to interactions with dolphins. We'll watch about 2 minutes of this trailer, and then we'll continue the lecture.
אנשים אכזרים מאוד שעשו לבן שלי ככה, מאוד.
Communicating again with society thanks to his interactions with dolphins. Western medicine fails where dolphins succeed. How can we explain that? This question leads to the main assertion of this lecture, that the natural instinctive behavior of animals and their subjectivity have a therapeutic effect on humans. This effect is based on two central mechanisms, making humans more self-conscious to forgotten and repressed feelings of their own, and activating human self. I'm aware of the ambivalence which exists in literature about the notion of animal having a self, and I will return to it later on. Right now, I would like to share with you some secrets from the practice of animal-assisted therapy. How do animals influence human feelings within the frame of AAT? This is just a taste of this. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to elaborate on the practice of AAT and the ways it is practiced in Israel. But one thing which is relevant and I would like to mention is the spatial context in which the therapy takes place. The meetings are usually held inside a room or a space where there is enough privacy for the patients to be safe and comfortable to share their thoughts and feelings with the practitioner and the animals. Obviously, only verbal patients will share their thoughts. So the kind of patients I relate to in the following examples are mainly children with emotional difficulties and not verbally disabled patients or ones who suffer from deep retardation and others. If the therapy is held inside a room or any other intimate space, even a dolphin reef, apparently, we may assume that the encounters of the patients with the animals are quite intimate. The patients may touch the animals if they like. The point of this whole introduction was to present the assumption that intimate encounters, I mean any intimate encounter with an animal, raises feelings. It could be joy and playfulness, like we saw in the movie. It could be curiosity when someone holds an animal, staring at it, searching its eyes, its body language. Or it could be fear, hiding from the animal, or cautious behavior. But for a therapeutic process to take place, it's not enough to experience feelings. It is necessary to name the feelings. In fact, naming negative feelings, like anger or disappointment, lowers the acting out of those feelings. So you can see in the diagram, when you give a name to something that you feel, like negative feeling, when when you're conscious of your feeling, in the right diagram, it lowers the acting out of those feelings, acting out of like screaming and violent expressions. But if the self-conscious is low of the feeling, the acting out is higher. So how does the naming work within AAT? Animals' behavior and reactions stimulate a discussion about the feelings. For example, if something drops on the floor and the rabbit jumps, the therapist could relate to the body's presentation and say out loud that the rabbit was frightened. Or if the dog wants to go for a walk during a session, heavily lies down on the floor and performs a growling, the therapist could interpret it out loud and say the dog maybe is disappointed. At later stages of the therapy, the patients would usually start using emotional language themselves, relating to the dog's feelings or to their own feelings. Gradually, their acting out disappears. Therefore, the naming of feelings which stand behind the animal's behavior produces a therapeutic process. AAT also produces an opportunity for what I call projective enactment. Projective enactment unconsciously situates an animal in an uncomfortable position, similar to a situation they have experienced in the past, in order to examine the animal's feelings and behavior. So, for example, I was working with a six-year-old girl who came from a difficult home where the mother was quite weak compared to the father. And when the father wanted to punish this girl, he would lock her in the small room for hours, and she would feel lonely and angry. And what happened during the sessions, she used to take a hamster and place it inside a box with no windows. And I'm not going into the ethical parts of this, I used to ask her, what do you think the hamster feels right now? It raised up a whole discussion about the way the hamster feels, and obviously we were talking about her feeling. Projective enactment constructs the animal's behavior according to the patient's anthropomorphic projections. This accords with symbolic interaction theories, such as that of Sanders, who observed dog owners projecting their thoughts onto their pets in veterinary clinics. As Cerullo writes, non-humans are not required to symbolically communicate with humans or contribute equally to the construction of shared meanings. For social interaction to occur, human interactants need only assume these potentials in non-humans. Pushing this approach further on, brought interactionist theories, such as Owen, to emphasize the need for non-humans to only appear as capable of independent action. That is to say, to appear as subjects or as entities who may share intersubjective interactions. Leslie Irvin, in his book, If You Tame Me, Understanding Our Connection with Animals, suggests that relating to someone as a subject means assuming he has a self. Do animals have a self? According to Irvin, we can only assume the self of animals just as we can only assume the self of other people. I would like to address the questions of animal selves through Irvin's understanding of it. Irvin mentions in his book four features of the I which underlie the self and make us aware of it. These four features can be recognized in infants in their first few months during their interaction with caretakers. I will soon explain each of them. Irvin Levin suggests these four features, the sense of agency, affectivity, coherence, and continuity of the animals, create a playing field in which a guardian with the pet, or a patient in our case, can enact a self and sense the subjective self of the other. Apparently, it is a mutual sharing of intentions, sharing a focus of attention, and sharing emotional states with animals, which influences people's feelings and thoughts. That leads us to the fourth therapeutic influence within the frame of AAT, the activation of self. In other words, animals may shape our responses to them in ways that are beyond our projection and anthropomorphism. Now I would like to return to a theoretical question. If the emphasis is on mutual interaction, can situations which lack interaction with animals, such as watching wild animals within a safari in Africa, where the animals do not share any attention or emotional state with the tourists, can these situations be considered social interactions? In order to answer this question first, I would like to present some anthropological theory and findings from the field. The way I'm going to present them is by reviewing each of the features of the self discussed before, first in relation to the self of the animal, and then in relation to the activation of tourist self during the safari. So the four features of self, as presented before, according to Irving, the first one is the sense of agency. There are different definitions of agency in literature, but I'm referring to agency as the capacity to act and change the surrounding according to one's interests. Whoever has a cat knows the situation when a cat wants attention and sits in front of the computer or on top of an open book and wouldn't move. But the situation of a dog who will scratch the front door when he's ready for a walk. We usually respond to animals' enactments of agency with the agency of our own. In case of the cats, we pet them or feed them. In the case of dogs, we take them for a walk. In the case of watching wild animals, there is also a chain reaction of agency. I would like to pause and watch together a couple of short videos I've taken during safaris. In the first one, we might see the agency of the small elephant, the young one, and see how he changes it and adopts it to the older one during. What we've seen is the small one running by himself, passing its mother, and then waiting. She passes, and then he walks slowly on, just like that. Mm-hmm. Thanks. The next one you will see gnus, it's kind of an antelope, immigrating and making sure they stay as a group. So they don't lose each other. That's their strategy. Thanks. So, can you guess how these scenes activate tourist agency? maybe. Yeah, we can. Yeah. Tommy's first reaction to wildlife is a strong desire to take a photo, and they usually take out their cameras out in order to hunt them animals and keep them for themselves. Apparently, the actions of the animals and humans stand on their own. There is no actual interaction. Let's examine the next feature of self, according to Abram. Sense of affectivity, meaning the capacity for emotions. As mentioned in the beginning of the lecture, many people believe animals have the capacity for emotions. We talked about the last 24 hours. We can tell when our pet is feeling sad and sick, or happy and excited, and we can tell by the body language if an elephant is feeling calm or stressed. On the human side, tourists who return from safari in Africa usually report a deep emotional state they've experienced watching wildlife in nature. Curtin puts it in this way. In this liminal embodied space of wildlife encounter, safari, all thought and action is concentrated on the moment. This provokes a deep sense of well-being that transcends the initial encounter, leading to spiritual fulfillment and psychological health benefits. Another feature of the self is a sense of coherence. Irwin's definition of coherence is the understanding of yourself and others as physical and integral entities, entities which are the locus of their agency. One way to determine a sense of coherence in animals is through the coherence of form. For example, the fact that dogs can tell between their guardian and strangers is due to their sense of coherence of form. Or, as another example, big cats in the wild indicate the capacity of coherence in the act of hiding in the bush, which requires a sense of a self as a bounded physical object concealed from others. Many tourists during the safari experience a sense of coherence, a kind of reunion with their past. A quote from a 50 years old tourist that we interviewed goes, "Animals have the instincts we used to have as children, the ones we lost as the years went by. Through the animals, we reunion with those instincts." This quote demonstrates how tourists' sense of coherence is activated just by watching wild animals. This is just a taste of everything, though. Activating the last feature of the self is the sense of continuity, which rises when you take an action which is based on past experience. The animal behaves the same way in the same context, for example, playful at home and frightened and defensive at the vets. The fact that a lion has a favorite rock, or that he keeps coming back to it again and again, sitting on top to view the savannah, shows he has a sense of continuity, that he remembers the rock and he keeps going back to it. The safari on the human side activates people's sense of continuity. Tourists repeated in the interviews variations of the following quote, you see here. The safari extracts the prehistoric man in you, the child in you, something in the openness to nature and the fact of being outside hours and hours, very close to nature. Peels layers and makes people feel more comfortable with each other, to joke with each other, to return to being children. This quote exemplifies the way animals in nature may activate human sense of continuity by reconnecting them with aspects of their history and their childhood. And I've heard different variations on this quote from different tourists. Now we are left with an unsolved issue. Watching wild animals in their natural habitat does not require an actual interaction. And I mean interaction in the sense of mutual involvement and directed actions we've discussed before. However, it is a situation which changes people's thoughts and feelings. Tourists go back home thinking about their identity as human beings, their biological roots, maternity and mother-child relations, and their animal-like behavior. The memories of the visual safari scenes continue to influence people long after the safari is over, at different time and space zones. It is a delayed reaction, a change which has a social effect potential. Non-humans and humans both serve as actants to form this change. A different theoretical and methodological approach is required to analyze this situation. Can actor network theory provide the adequate tools to analyze a social interaction which does not involve any contact or mutual visuality? I would prefer to leave these questions open for discussion and further research. Right now, I would like to conclude this lecture with a short summary. In this paper, I intended to demonstrate two ways in which animals may have therapeutic influence on people's feelings. One was taken from the practice of AAT, and the other from anthropological field based on research of safaris of Africa. I tried to take both the practice of AAT and findings from the safari one theoretical step forward. I used a symbolic interaction theory to explain the animal assisted therapy engagement with the animals, and I suggested actor network theory as a framework of understanding safari tourism as a social interaction between humans and non-humans, while there is no actual interaction taking place. Obviously, the connection and interface between the findings of the two disciplines can be furtherly analyzed. But for now, I will leave this endeavor for future research. Thank you.